This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. The legal status of around 800,000 people is in question after Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced yesterday that the Trump administration will be ending the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, program. The president himself had indicated that would happen over the weekend.
The administration's decision throws the ball back in the court of Congress, which will have 6 months before DACA is due to end entirely. Political analyst Charlie Sykes joins us in the studio to look at yesterday's announcement and much more from just the last few days. Welcome back to the show.
It is my pleasure.
Let's start with the news from Tuesday morning. As was hinted at over the weekend, the Trump administration announced it'll be ending the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, DACA. This is a president who was already not especially popular with pro-immigrant groups. So did this announcement come as any surprise to you?
No, and I don't think anybody who is paying attention to the campaign really should have been surprised by it. There was a lot of speculation that he was agonizing about this. He had suggested earlier that he loves the Dreamers, that they could rest easy. But this is a president who continues to play to his base. Now, I suppose if you're looking for the silver lining, it is the slow rollout of the rescinding of DACA. 6 months kind of kicking the can over to Congress to be able to act on this.
6 months, but for people who are in the country legally under DACA, that probably does not come with a lot of comforts.
No, for a couple of different reasons. I mean, number one, just to go back to how we got here in the first place, of course, Republicans and the administration are pointing to President Obama's overreach in enacting DACA through executive order. But he did that because Congress had failed to act on this. It had passed the House of Representatives, only got 55 votes of the needed 60 votes in the Senate to pass. So Congress, when it had an opportunity, when it was controlled by the Democrats to do this, failed to do it. So the question is, how willing are they to do this now?
Right. So the president sent the responsibility for the 800,000 people in the country on DACA status and any future people who might want to be here back to Congress to figure out. How tricky will this be for the Republican-led Congress?
It's going to be very tricky. First of all, they have so many other things on the agenda to have to do in a very short period of time. Number two, this is an issue that is incredibly fraught for the base. One of the things that Trump has not really explained yet is, would he sign any piece of legislation that they passed, assuming that they could muster the votes to pass it? Is there a possibility that if the base became aroused enough that he might actually veto it? So you have a lot of Republicans who are going to be approaching this very tentatively. Now, you know, Paul Ryan has staked out a position that he wants to see congressional action. He does not want to. He does not want to start deporting the Dreamers. And by the way, just the politics of this issue, the optics would be so horrible of taking 800,000 really law-abiding young people who have jobs, who are studying, some of whom were in the military, and, you know, stripping them of their legal status. This is one of those things that no one, I think, really wants to have happen, or certainly no elected Republican wants to have happen. The question is whether or not they're going to risk having Donald Trump cut them off at the knees.
House Speaker Paul Ryan, as you say, says he favors fixing DACA. What are the fixes that the Republicans could look at?
Well, they could just pass it into law. This is one thing. I mean, you know, legitimately, this is something that Congress should do. It should be in law. It should not be something subject to, the whims of an election or an executive order. But on the other hand, as mentioned before, you know, they've had a chance to do it. They haven't done it before. This should be the easiest of all the immigration issues. There are a lot of complex, tricky, thorny immigration issues. But when you're talking about kids who were brought here, who themselves broke no law whatsoever, who are productive members of society, this should be the easiest bipartisan fix. And the fact that it won't be is an indication of just how toxic our politics have become.
Speaking of toxic, what do you make of the announcement being made by Jeff Sessions rather than the president himself?
Well, you know, Harry Truman used to have a sign on his desk, "The buck stops here." With President Trump, the buck never seems to stop with him. There's always somebody else who has to do the heavy lifting, always somebody else to blame if it goes wrong. I thought two things were interesting. Number one, that you have Jeff Sessions rather than the president announce this. Number two, that Jeff Sessions did not take any questions. Here you have a major policy decision by the administration, affects hundreds of thousands of people, and he would not even answer questions about it. Not a profile of courage.
So as we look forward into September, it seems like there are plenty of other rocky roads to go down for this president and this administration. On top of immigration, there's the tax code reform the president says he wants. There's the debt ceiling debate. There's funding the government. What sort of shape is Donald Trump's vaunted deal-making ability in when it comes to Congress?
Well, there was a very interesting piece in the New York Times that talked about the vaunted deal-making ability, which, by the way, we have not seen yet. We keep hearing it talked about, but we're not really seeing that this is a particularly effective negotiator, in part because, number one, Donald Trump has very little interest or knowledge of the policies that he's talking about. That became very apparent during the debate over health care. So we're going to have to see. There's a huge amount on the table. I think it is unlikely that Congress will not find some way to raise the debt. That would be, you know, that would be unthinkable. They won't shut down the federal government. They probably will come up with a way to fund the, you know, disaster relief for Hurricane Harvey. Beyond that, though, everything's a question mark.
Hurricane Harvey, and then we're likely to start hearing a lot more about Hurricane Irma. The president was criticized for the way he spoke on his trip to Texas after Hurricane Harvey. But has anything been off about the way the administration has reacted in the face of its first natural disaster?
So far, not really. Not in terms of substance. Of course, you know, the president's first visit there, you know, made it look like it was a reality TV show. I think he did better over the weekend. But so far, you know, there hasn't been a disaster. On the other hand, you know, keep in mind how expensive this is going to be, how complex this is going to be. We're still in early days. And if this, in fact, was a once in a 1,000-year storm, this is a once in a 1,000-year recovery effort, if that means anything. So we have a long way to go.
So from natural catastrophes to possibly human-caused catastrophes and the state of things between the U.S. and North Korea and President Trump's reaction to it.
Extremely scary. How did we maneuver ourselves into a position where the future of sentient life on the planet is in the hands of Kim Il-yoon and Donald Trump? Remember there was a while there where President Trump was suggesting that his tough rhetoric had gotten the North Koreans to back off, that they were so respectful of his leadership and his rhetoric that they were dialing down their operation. That clearly is not true.
Well, and while we don't see North Korean leader Kim Jong-un on Twitter, his approach to letting the world know his opinion does not seem really all that different than President Trump's.
The puzzling thing, look, our policies so far have failed, so a tougher policy is not necessarily a bad idea. Putting more pressure on China is not necessarily a bad idea. But then there was the report late last week that President Trump was seriously considering scrapping our trade agreement with South Korea. At the very moment when we should really be joined at the hip with South Korea, he's talking about entering into, you know, taking actions that might result in a trade war. That was puzzling.
So we could talk about the Trump administration ad nauseum, but that will apparently soon be the job of a certain former Milwaukee sheriff. The report is David Clark, having abruptly resigned last week, will be taking a job with a pro-Trump political action committee. What do you make of the way the end of the Clark era came about?
It was unexpected in the respect that it was so fast. I think that David Clark checked out of that job a long time ago. He was looking for an exit in the worst possible way, and apparently has taken it. You know, when he resigned with no notice whatsoever, by the way, I don't advise anybody else doing that with their employer, with no notice really whatsoever, there was some suggestion that maybe he was going to get a job in the White House or, you know, some very sensitive job that required his immediate presence. Well, apparently that's not the case. And I'm not surprised. Given the professional, the legal baggage that he is bringing, I think that probably scuttled his chances to get a Homeland Security job. I don't think this administration under Chief of Staff John Kelly was going to bring David Clark into the White House at the very time when they seem to be cleaning house at the White House. So apparently David Clark is going to be doing what he's been doing and now getting paid for it, which is to be going on television and saying nice things about Donald Trump.
Well, and I wonder, given the way that the Homeland Security announcement, then de-announcement played out, whether this was a case of somebody taking the first solid job offer that came his way.
You know, I was thinking about that, that having, and people will remember that he goes on talk radio and announces he's accepting the job before he had been given it. And then there was this long period where everybody was saying, no, we don't know. No,
a couple of months.
Yes. No announcement. So he was really twisting in the wind. Clearly, he did not want something like that to happen again. So we pull the trigger before we find out what the job is going to be. But yeah, the story of David Clark has been an extraordinary one. And obviously, based on the reaction, not just a local story. I mean, you know, we've spent years watching David Clark. I certainly spent a lot of time watching David Clark grow and change and morph in his position. But he's now... he now belongs to all Americans.
Short of Joe Arpaio in Phoenix, there are not a lot of local sheriffs that get the national headlines that David Clark does.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that because it apparently, in Donald Trump's world, these are his two favorite lawmen, Joe Arpaio and David Clark, which I'd be interested to know privately what law enforcement officials who actually know, you know, who actually, you know, show up and do their jobs and are concerned about the rule of law. I wonder what they actually think about this. But apparently that is the president's idea of a tough lawman.
So David Clark is no longer the Milwaukee County Sheriff. But how do you see the effect of his tenure lingering into the future?
Well, the effect on law enforcement will be absolutely zero. Number one, because the sheriff's department heads under Clark had so little impact. But he's also, as I mentioned before, he's been checked out for so long. It's hard to imagine how it will change things, except that I was speaking to somebody who was around some of the deputies in the wake of the resignation, and they were described as being much more relaxed than they were before. I do think that as many strengths as David Clark had in terms of highlighting certain issues, his indifference to his day job really was becoming a significant problem, or had become a significant problem, with the lawsuits, the deaths in the jail, some of the other practices. And I think this will be a good opportunity for everybody to turn their page and perhaps now have a sheriff's department that might actually work well and play well with others when it comes to others in the community and in law enforcement.
Well, along those lines, what would you expect in terms of a replacement from Governor Walker?
Well, this is a tricky one because, remember, David Clark was appointed by Republican Governor Scott McCallum, but he never ran as a Republican, in part because in Milwaukee County, you can't win as a Republican. So nobody was fooled by the fact that David Clark was really a Democrat, but he ran as a Democrat. So that's going to be interesting. When Scott Walker appoints someone, will they run as a Democrat or as a Republican? If they run as a Republican, they're going to be here for basically a year and a half or so, because it's hard to imagine a Republican winning. But there are a lot of strong candidates. One of the reasons why I'm not surprised that David Clark was looking for an exit was I don't think there was any way that he was going to win another primary. He was not going to survive in this election.
Finally, the effort to recall Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett came up short this week when the man behind the petition drive announced he had apparently misread public sentiment. And he apologized to the mayor for, quote, any annoyance his drive may have caused. This was not necessarily an effort that got a lot of traction.
What a complete waste of time. When I first heard about this, I think it was out of town, and I was thinking, what was the point of that? I mean, look, recalls became a big deal here. You might recall, I mean, the first big recall was the effort to recall Tom Ament, which resulted in his resignation. And then, of course, all the recalls involved in the Walker era. But you have to have people who are aroused. People just don't want to have a do-over when it comes to an election. And, you know, whether you like him or not, Tom Barrett just has not and will never inspire that kind of passion.
Charlie Sykes, you inspire a lot of passion in all of us. Thanks.
Thank you.
News analyst Charlie Sykes is a Lake Effect contributor and a regular guest on MSNBC. He's a former talk show host and Milwaukee journalist.